Welcome to the So Toxipod episode. I don't know because the number really doesn't matter, does it, Toby?
Dude, you could have told me that we're starting immediately. Goddamn.
I figured it would...
That's pretty funny. That's pretty on brand.
It would cover our... Well, we don't script anything.
No, exactly.
So pause for awkward break. Here we go.
Okay, let me rearrange the table a bit. Jeez. Okay, here we go. Normally we take a short break between you playing and us starting. Here we go.
I have to say to start with this is going to be a bit of a weird episode because it's the first time I've taken notes to talk about something because there's been so much stuff happening since the last time we recorded an episode, let alone the last 3 days.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely worthy of opening a beer and getting right into business. Do you have a lighter for me? Never mind.
There you go. I was thinking.
So maybe before we get into the, from our point of view, very obvious topic to discuss, which will be the final F1 race that took place this day in Abu Dhabi, ended a few hours ago. How was your weekend, Toby, apart from F1?
Oh, dude, it's been fine. Life's been interesting these past few weeks. I think the last time we recorded was end of November, somewhere around there. So it's been a good time since. It's been my birthday, and that was really nice. And new project started at work or at uni, I guess. Just been busy, busy as hell. But overall, positive feelings, you know. Been a good few weeks. What about you?
I've had a good couple of weeks as well. I want to start by wishing my brother a very happy birthday today. Mm-hmm. If he happens to listen to this episode on this day, which I doubt, but shout out to Josh, he turned 17 today. So we had a good breakfast this morning and that concluded our weekend family gathering. We spent a couple nights in some center park, similar thing and had like a big house for all of us for the weekend. That was a lot of fun getting everybody together. And then it was a lot of fun driving back today because I was racing. I wasn't driving irresponsibly. I have to add this, but I got lucky with the road. And my point of arrival when we started was 2 o'clock, quarter past two, more to say. And then we took a quick break to fill up for gas. And then it was 17 past that we were supposed to arrive. The race started at 2 and I really wanted to watch the race. And it was a 3-hour, 20-minute, so like 350-kilometer drive. I ended up shaving off 25 minutes and arriving 3 minutes before the race started and had the stream set up and it was perfect. Like right when the formation lap started is when I started watching.
Yeah,
it was
fantastic.
Ultimate. So good stuff up until today. And today really was the icing on the cake, I have to say. But I guess we can't skip around that topic anymore.
No, dude, let's fucking talk about it. Huh?
Let's talk about what happened maybe coming into this weekend, last week. I think this was the end of a doubleheader.
Yep.
So we had a race in, I believe, Qatar. Was it Qatar?
No, it was Jeddah. Qatar was 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, Jeddah was last weekend.
Which I got wrong.
And Jeddah is the new track. Jeddah is the completely new built track.
And Qatar also was a first-time drive.
But the track had existed previously a long time for MotoGP, I think since 2008 or so.
Yeah, probably.
So it was the first time that F1 cars
were on it. Jeddah was a street circuit and was freshly built.
And that, they built the whole track in, I think, 8 months, which is unheard of, unless you hear of oil money. But that race was quite controversial, some might say.
Dude.
There was a lot of very interesting things that have been covered extensively.
Yeah.
Among other things, Hamilton and Verstappen collided in the most weird way, completely the opposite of Silverstone, you could say. One was chicken, the other one was chicken, but in a completely different way.
Yeah, Silverstone also was high-speed corner. This was low-speed straights.
Yeah, it was...
It was quite weird.
Very odd.
But probably at this point, you've heard about what happened there. More notes are notably as well... entering that race, so not this one, but the one before, Hamilton and Verstappen, the two title contenders, were 8 points apart. Coming out of that race, they were on equal footing. They were both at 369.5 points. Going into this race in Abu Dhabi, the title decider on equal points, which only had happened once before, I believe, in the history of Formula One.
In 1970-71, that season. So it's been over 50 years.
1970-71?
Yeah.
The year 19,000.
The season 1970 to 1971 for our less vocally skilled peeps.
So we entered this weekend on equal footing there. And quite a few things were still up for grabs. There was the fight for fourth place in the constructors between the two Ferrari drivers and Lando Norris. And generally just a bunch of things that were really interesting going on. But if you're interested in Jeddah, I'd suggest listening to Peter Windsor's analysis on YouTube. He's pretty good at this sort of stuff. He's been in the game for a long time. And then we enter Abu Dhabi. Historically, a Mercedes track, except for last year, where Verstappen, for the first time in the turbo hybrid era, became the first driver to beat Mercedes there.
To beat Hamilton.
To beat Hamilton there as well. Hamilton, though, at that point was recovering from COVID. So, you know, the odds were, yeah, it was interesting. Coming into this year, Mercedes on, yeah, I mean, Hamilton on a three race, had won the hat trick before that. So was coming into this race as with as much momentum as he probably could have. Yeah. And Verstappen being very much the underdog. And FP1 happened and FP2 happened and everyone was like, okay, what's going on here? The Red Bulls spent a lot of time on the soft tire in practice. Didn't spend any time on the hards. People were speculating, yada, yada, yada. FP3 happens. Nothing much there. It is looking Mercedes strong with Red Bull maybe being able to challenge because of the work they've done on the soft tire. Who knows?
Also, to quickly intervene and mention, in FP3, I believe, Raikkonen had a nice shunt.
Yeah.
Or it was FP2, I don't know, but he had his last shunt of the week, or this last shunt, I should say, of the weekend, which I guess we'll get to later. Yeah, his last race ever in Formula One,
yeah.
As well as Giovinazzi as teammates going out together. Kimi leaves a bit larger of a legacy, I think, than Giovinazzi.
Yeah, I do think so.
Due to the time of having almost spent 20 years,
yeah.
Or exactly 20, no, but his debut was 20 years ago, but I think 2009 he left for
exactly,
a couple
seasons. He spent 2 years away doing rally and NASCAR or IndyCar, I don't know. Yeah, and then qualifying happens. And I don't know if you watched qualifying. I don't think
I did not. So how about you start giving us the rundown there?
So qualifying was really interesting. So qualifying one, nothing unexpected happens. And then the interesting thing starts. We have the Mercedes and the Red Bulls and pretty much every team trying to get through on mediums. And I'll spare you the details, but essentially Verstappen sets a competitive time on the mediums. Red Bull decides...
Before we go into that, I had a question that I think will help clarify the importance of this. Now, there's tire strategies. You have, as a team, you have certain amounts of tires available to you for the whole race weekend, including all three practice sessions, as well as the qualifying. And that has some sort of effect on what tire you start with. Could you maybe explain what that is?
Well, the
tire choice in qualifying has a effect essentially on your starting race position.
So you're talking about two things. It's about the weekend allocated amounts of tires, which the teams have some influence on. I think this weekend it was two sets of hards, three sets of or four sets of mediums, and three sets of softs is what most people took into the weekend, something like that. They get a choice. They have X amount of tires they can choose from. And then how they split that between the tires they want to have is, I think, up to the teams, something like that. Don't quote me on it. Now, the other thing you're talking about is that whichever tire you set your fastest lap on in qualifying two, so qualifying is split into three small sessions. At the end of the first, the slowest five get out. At the end of the second or the next batch of five leave if they're too slow and don't make it to the top 10. And then it's the so-called top 10 shootouts. Where the top 10 drive for fastest lap overall. Whichever tire you set your fastest lap on in qualifying two, if you qualify through it, if you get into the top 10, is the tire you have to start the race on. Not, you know, if you qualify on mediums, you start on that medium tire, not on any medium tire, on that medium tire. So you always start the race with a used tire.
That's very important for later.
Unless you do not qualify for qualifying three, for the top 10 shootout, anyone from 11 onwards gets three tire choice. So they could also start on a new tire, I believe. They for sure get to choose which tire they start on. If they can choose a new one, I'm not entirely sure. And I don't particularly care right now. So
not very important.
not for now.
No,
it has been in the past, I'm pretty sure. But for us now, the interesting thing is that Verstappen set a competitive time, but not one you would be completely safe with. They decide for him to do another run, stay on the tires, stay out, and do one more lap on them. Into the first corner on that second run, he locks up, flat spots the tire, essentially eliminating the chance of him starting on that tire because the tire is, well, not ruined, worse off now. You know, a flat spotted tire is always harder to drive.
Less grip, et cetera.
Yeah. Leading them to set another time on the soft tire, meaning they got through no problem. Both him and Perez, his teammate, they get through, meaning they start on the soft tire. That was the first big thing in this weekend where it was, okay, Mercedes got through on the medium, starts on the mediums. Red Bull starts on the softs, leading to all sorts of shenanigans. You know, okay, so the first 8 laps, Red Bull is diagnosed or prognosed to be faster, and then they'll probably have to pit sooner, blah, 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 blah. That was the big thing in Q2. Q3 happens. Everyone's thinking, okay, you know, Mercedes is going to ace this. Hamilton had looked insanely quick. And then Max Verstappen set his lap.
Which was fast.
Which was incredibly fast. He got a tow from Perez down the straight. So Perez was giving him a slipstream and then moved out of the way. But that didn't even do it. That didn't even do that much in the end. I've seen some analysis say, okay, that probably gave him at most 0.2 of a second.
But what was the difference to Hamilton at the very end?
5 or 6 tenths.
I thought that was before Hamilton set his final.
Hamilton set another lap, at which point it was 3.10. Verstappen's lap, I mean, we will never know, but Verstappen's lap is prognosed to have been enough, even had Hamilton set the time he did in the end. We'll never know, but it was there.
Also, so, Hamilton was on mediums.
No, not in Q3. Q3, he was on softs.
But he started on mediums.
Yeah, because he finished Q2 on mediums.
Ah,
it's okay. What you finish Q2 on is okay. What you start in the race with, and then Q3 is always softs.
Okay.
Or I mean, they can go into Q3 on mediums. You'll just be slower.
All right.
So
the starting is along with the viewership at the same time.
The starting grid sets out to be Verstappen ahead of Hamilton, ahead of Norris, ahead of Perez. Everyone around Hamilton is on softs. Everyone's saying, okay, there's no way, you know, they'll have an advantage in the early stages. He'll, you know, they'll eat him up. Now comes the race. And
let's
Hamilton
sum up the grid first before we get to the race.
I mean, we've told the most important parts.
Yeah.
Bottas was in sixth, which was disappointing for him. And then behind Perez was a Ferrari, and then the other Ferrari. No, behind Perez was.
So Simone, it was Verstappen, Hamilton, Perez, Norris. Norris got P3. Sorry. Norris, Perez, Sainz.
Bottas, Leclerc, Tsunoda, Ocon, yeah. Ricardo.
And we need to, honestly, I know Kimi got driver of the day today, but my favorite would have been Tsunoda.
Tsunoda said fantastic.
If it wasn't Kimi's last race of his career, it would have been Tsunoda.
Yeah, Tsunoda got. And it would have been Verstappen.
Probably.
But Tsunoda got fourth at the end of the race, little spoiler here, which is also really impressive.
Because we won't really be focusing on anything apart from positions 1 and 2.
Yeah, so the race starts. And I guess you watched that on a high heart rate just driving home. So you talk us through the start.
Yeah, so I get home, I turn on my television, and the formation lap, the first light is just glowing red. So I'm like, perfect. All right, so we start with the warming of the tires, and we get into position. And then race starts. And honest to God, I thought my stream had lagged for a second because Hamilton moved like an inch. And it's hard to see the way the camera's set, how far they move at the very beginning. But it seemed like Verstappen just stayed. And I was like, wait, is my stream stalling? And no, he got a shit start, man.
Yeah.
He did not get off at all. And afterwards, Amazon Web Services analysis yielded, I think, a reaction time difference of 1/10 of a second.
Which is a lot.
Which meant that the 0 to 200 kph difference was 4/10 of a second, which is a lot in Formula One on the first opening straight. And nothing happens the first corner, which is surprising, but it's basically because Hamilton got such a good start. There's no real competition at that point. The next 3 to 4 corner, or yeah, the next 4 corners, essentially, Verstappen builds up a good time and gets closer again. The gap was at one point, I think, at 1.5 seconds. So he got close again, and then he gets in for a lunge. And this is where turn 6 happens. And this is, we have our first controversial incident, which in my opinion, and everybody at F1 Sky, which is British and usually very Lewis biased, the commentary was, oh my God, Lewis can't do this.
Yeah.
So what happened essentially is that Verstappen came from far back using just the toe of the, what is it called? When you're behind someone and you have less air, so you split.
Slipstream. Slippery stream.
Slipstream. I wanted to say
slipstream. You slip through the air.
Anyway, so he gets up, he lunges in. He stays with on the racing line, essentially, but it's a very aggressive move. Hamilton can't complete his plan move, but it seemed like he reacted fairly late. What he essentially then does, though, is the point is going into the apex of the curb, Verstappen has nudged his nose in front of Verstappen, of Hamilton's. So he is slightly ahead at that point, one would argue.
Which is a legal move.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard racing, for sure, because it was not very forgiving or not very, like, not much space for error there, at least. So Hamilton dodges, and admittedly, he does have to dodge, but that's racing. So he goes off track, and he cuts the corner. It's a really big corner, too, because the next curve takes up, and it's a lot of space you gain. So he cuts straight across and ends up gaining quite the advantage. But technically, the way the race regulation is written, and this is why what the stewards then said was, Lewis did not gain an advantage there. He essentially, after leaving the corner, basically slowed down a tad to get Verstappen and that gap back to what it was before the corner. But one would argue that the apex starts at, that's the start of the corner, and that's where Verstappen was ahead. So there was a little bit of confusion, understanding, really continuing the whole conversation and controversy of the stewards this year and the race director specifically.
Yeah, and I just on that, because it then became quite controversial, as you said, right? People were saying, okay, well, you know, you can't push someone off the track. He has to give the position back. And then when that didn't happen, people started bringing up, well, Verstappen did the same thing in Brazil and he didn't get a penalty or he didn't get investigated for it. Now, there's two thoughts I have here, which the first one is, okay, but they both left the track in Brazil.
Yeah.
He versus here, Verstappen stayed in the white lines. Verstappen stayed on the legal line or on the legal track versus Hamilton, who went off the track and re-overtook. That's up for debate through that. My second thought is, yes, okay, Brazil, sure, one precedent. But in the races since Brazil, the precedent was also clearly set that these moves will then be punished. Right?
Yes.
So,
and this one was even more in the area of being able to be punished because one car did not go off the road.
Yeah.
And therefore, I felt like a disadvantage was there because the main disadvantage of one or two position-wise is that you don't have anybody ahead of you. You can just flat out drive. And I don't know, I felt like that was a disadvantage. So lap after lap goes by after this, or the next, you know, five laps or so go by, and people are just kind of getting a bit more deflated because Hamilton is killing it.
Racing.
Amazing drive today by him. Can't say that enough. So he's pulling away easily. And it's looking like Red Bull are just like, man, we can't do this. We have to pray and basically do as many pit stops as possible to just maintain the damage. And the good thing with Red Bull was that Perez was up there as well. He had a really good start, so he ended up coming into third after the first corner. So they had two cars there to work with Hamilton, which without Perez, this race would have ended a lot differently.
Yeah, but I see it in your notes there, I think.
Yeah, it's coming later. Absolutely. Well, then we take, I think the first pit window started at like lap 14, 15, something along those lines.
Yeah, the window started at 13, and then I think Verstappen pits around lap 14,
15. At that time, I think Hamilton had built almost a 7-point lead.
Yeah, a seven second lead.
Yeah.
Which, again, just to reiterate, Hamilton was flying out there.
He was taking
out half a second on Verstappen, out of Verstappen, when Verstappen was still in the optimal soft window pit, in the soft tire window, performance window.
And Stellar Verstappen car. Had, yeah, softs against mediums. Yeah.
And was easily losing time.
So we get to the first pit window and Verstappen puts on hards because they're planning that this is going to be a one-stop race. But as we see with the softs, and it's kind of a creeping doubt at this point, the tire degradation is a lot quicker or more and harsher than Pirelli and other people expected. So there's already thoughts being put out there, like potential two-stop strategies.
Yeah.
What if Red Bull might be able to pull that off if they do so? So we fast forward, Verstappen pits, I think lap 15 or 16 it was.
Yeah, and Hamilton, one thing I want to add there, Hamilton follows him a lap later. Yeah. Right? Hamilton, with a tire advantage on the mediums, follows him a lap later to deflate the undercut, which is where you pit first and then on fresher tires, take time out of your opponent. Also going on hards. And another thing here, Mercedes had one used and one clean set of hards and decides to put Hamilton on the used set of hards. I don't know why. But they do, which doesn't make a huge difference. They've only used it for one lap and blah, blah, blah. But I thought I'd still mention it.
I think it's very much worth mentioning because Hamilton would not make another pit stop. for the entire race. And this is
some stuff I'm gonna do.
And this is lap, I think, 20 or so at most, or 18 or something. Before,
that. It's one lap after.
So there's 40 laps to go in this race, and he has to do 40 more laps on a hard tire that has minus one lap tire age, which doesn't seem a lot, but on that range, it actually quite is, because the degradation is a lot more than expected, et cetera, et cetera. Mind you, we haven't had any incidents yet in terms of cars retiring or potential safety cars or whatever it may be, which is always opportune moments to pit again. So maybe that's what Mercedes were also banking on in that time. And then, maybe you want to take it from here.
And then the race continues. And there's two things I want to mention before we get into the next big stage, which is the Paris time, which is, so Verstappen and Hamilton are on the same tire. Red Bull hasn't run this tire the weekend, the entire weekend. They haven't done a single lap on the hards, which is why they had two new sets on the hards. So they don't know their car from actual experience. All, you know, they were trusting Verstappen and they were trusting their analysis for the hards, which is a gamble. But as we'll get to later, it didn't matter.
Perez stayed out on his softs, by the way.
Yeah, Perez staying out here, but it didn't matter in the end because the second point, Hamilton starts wrecking Verstappen on the hard, like taking so much time out of him again. At some point, I think it was approaching 10 seconds.
Yeah, no, it got the 10 seconds. Yeah.
And all during this, Red Bull was keeping Sergio Perez, the second Red Bull driver, out there on the softs.
Meaning he was in first and Hamilton in second.
Was catching Verstappen him quick.
In third. Yeah, and they were on the hunt. So then they met in, I think, lap 22 around that time.
Perez and Hamilton.
Perez and Hamilton met, and flashback for me, I felt like deja vu.
To Turkey.
Yeah. Because in Turkey, we saw probably one of the best battles of the year in terms of really good racing, until we had two incidents today that also would qualify for best racing moments of the year. And Perez and Hamilton have another insanely good battle, which it involves the same, let a person overtake you to overtake them again. Mm-hmm. What is the commentator's name for it?
Switchback.
The switcheroo.
Back is a specific move. I don't know if
The switcheroo. They always refer to it as. It's funny. I can't even begin to describe the amount of amazing racing that was going on. But Perez made that car so wide. And this guy was like 10, 15 laps on the softs longer than Verstappen.
Yeah.
And it was insane to see what he did with his tires, the way he recharged his batteries at some point while dueling Hamilton.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was really incredible. And I think it took place over two laps pretty much. Hamilton arrived at the end of one lap, battled with him fully for one lap, and then for another half lap or so. By the end of which, Verstappen was, I think, 7/10 behind Hamilton again.
And he made up in those two laps. It was 5 seconds in one and two in the second lap that Verstappen made up, which is a ridiculous amount of time. Yeah. So that was the second incident of amazing teamwork by Red Bull drivers, and major props to Perez, who wouldn't have made this race even, like, without him, the race wouldn't have been close. Hamilton would have torn it apart.
Yeah, I saw something really interesting going into the future of it. Had Perez not played it that well, Hamilton would have had enough space at the end to pit under the safety car without having to worry about Verstappen. And then,
And that brings us to the next topic, which on my agenda is the virtual safety car.
Yeah, one thing I want to mention after this. So Verstappen gets close again to Hamilton, and Hamilton just starts tearing him apart again.
Yeah. He has it's amazing.
Yeah.
And then, so there's a lead that's gaining again, and I think it's almost 5 seconds at this point again. Hamilton's beating
Verstappen. It's around, I think the VSC happened in around lap 37.
Something around those lines. So Hamilton is pulling away again, and then I forget who it is, but is it Raikkonen or?
Raikkonen at that point has his braking system failed, so he's out. Russell loses his gearbox, I believe, so he is out. But neither of them stop on track; they go back to the pits, and then Giovinazzi, also on his last race, sadly,
his brakes.
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was his brakes. I think he lost power or something.
Well, the point was where he ended up parking his car was right in the, if you miss the apex of that corner, you shoot right into where Giovinazzi left the car. So it was an obvious call to get the virtual safety car out there, because it was way removed from the track, obviously, but you needed to, means people slow down their speed by 40%, no overtaking. So it takes the racing element out of it, so you can be sure that people will stay on track. And yeah, so car was removed, but in that time, and you have to call the truck or whatever to lift the car away. So that all cost several laps. I think both Red Bulls came in and pitted.
Nope, only Verstappen, because Perez had pitted after holding up Hamilton, and had pitted for the hards, which is what he stayed on until later.
So yeah, how do we continue? Because Verstappen uses a safety car to get into
Yeah,
the
uses the
pit.
virtual safety car. Notably, a virtual safety car means that the drivers have to adhere to a preset speed around the track. So while they are going slower, they are maintaining the distance from each other. But because they are going slower, when you go to the pits, the net time you can lose in the pit stop is reduced by around 5 to 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, I was saying from the beginning that Red Bull, if they lose the start, their best bet is probably a two-stop and try to pull something like they did
Ooh,
in. Yeah,
I
my
would
gut
believe
reaction
you
telling
if
me
you
crazy.
hadn't
Yeah,
texted
no, I mean, huh?
If you had texted me that, I would believe you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was going dark for the entire race. I didn't. I had my phone on silent, and I didn't want to be spoiled, in case there's any Wi-Fi hiccups or something like that. But Red Bull choose take this chance to put Verstappen on newer tires are now only, I think, don't let me lie, 14 to 16 seconds behind Hamilton. And Verstappen essentially has 20 laps to catch up to him. And if he gets a delta on Verstappen on Hamilton of 1/10 a second per
Ooh.
lap, he would catch him up.
And
And
this is where the race begins.
yeah. And now, incredibly, so Verstappen starts catching Hamilton, but nowhere near quick enough.
Yeah.
Hamilton keeps up the time and actually starts pulling out time on Verstappen again on 20 laps older hard tires.
If I believe the first 5 laps or 6 laps that Verstappen was new on his tires.
He
The
gained in the,
first was 800s,
yeah,
and then it
eight
got
tenths,
six,
eight tenths,
yeah,
yeah.
8/10. Then it was 6/10. Then it was 4/10. Then it was 2/10. Then it was 2/10
Yeah.
again. And I think Hamilton pulled out 2/10 again, which was ridiculous. Just to see the kind of like this guy, remember, he put on the hards that were used 1 lap and he was still going on the same. And Verstappen had just completed his second pit stop since. So, yeah, we continue and we get into the last, I think, 10 laps of the race.
Yeah, which were beautifully hailed and beautifully initiated by a pit by Christian Horner on the pit wall, talking to the commentator, saying, "Yeah, look, we're losing this. There's no way we're catching up. We need a
Yeah,
miracle."
we need the racing gods to decide this for us and help us.
And
That's his
then,
last comment, and like 2 laps
and
afterwards.
two laps afterwards, Nicholas Latifi in the fight for, I think, 16th, fighting with Mick Schumacher,
15th.
15th.
Yeah,
Wow.
yeah.
Just has a snap of oversteer. He was in dirty air and fucking crashes. Has a big old crash. Brakes catch on fire.
Parts
And
of the
the
car all over the track.
yeah, in a position where it can't be easily removed. And the safety car comes out. And I'll be fully. And we're getting to the meat of things now. I'll fully say, I was looking for Max. I was hoping Max would win, but I didn't have much hope.
No.
At that point and throughout the entire race, pretty much after the start, I was saying,
After the first lap, he was
yeah,
like, yeah,
I was
okay.
saying, this isn't happening. This isn't
And
happening.
then
Nothing's
five
happening.
laps into his like catch up, now you got to catch up. And then when Hamilton starts like,
Yeah,
nah, it's like,
exactly.
oh, okay.
And I was at that point, I was like, okay, you know what? Hamilton has been driving like a maniac for the
Props.
past four races. Incredible. He fully deserves this championship.
Yeah, it's sad that they can't
Yeah,
tie
yeah.
to some extent.
Yeah, and then that safety car happens, and I go, "Oh, that means nothing." I was like, "Okay, well, what does that mean? It means they'll be bunched up, but Hamilton is so much quicker." And then they fucking pit Verstappen, and I'm like, "Oh fuck, I didn't expect that." And they pit Verstappen and put him on soft tire, and I was like, "Yeah, of course, a masterstroke." And I was like, "Wait a minute, this race is 100% finishing behind the safety car."
Because when this happens and when the safety car comes out, we are in lap 53 of 58. So there's 5 laps to go, really. And the pit stops have been done. I think both Red Bulls came in and Perez retired, actually. But his main like cheer was how much he had helped Verstappen
Yeah.
throughout the weekend in
Well,
total.
the Perez retirement, actually, we need to talk about later because
We
that is a whole nother deal
we
because I
will.
read something on that, an
I
official
don't know that, so
explanation.
you can break that news
Yeah.
later. But getting into the final 5 laps, we're behind the safety car, and it's a lot of shit that has to be removed from the track, including the car. And it takes quite a while because of the fire extinguishers and the safety precautions, etc. And then you have to move the vehicle out and clean up the track as well. So most people are predicting, okay, they're going to finish it behind the safety car. But, and major props to the stewards, because their intent was, no, we want a racing finish to the season. Which, and I thought that was great because it would have sucked to see it in like this, regardless of who would have won the race thing at the end. But I like that that was their main intent there.
Yeah.
So they say, great, there's going to be a restart on the final lap, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But it's a flying restart, mind you. So they're moving. And Verstappen and
gets to dictate the speed of the start
before he then
fully
initiates it. So Verstappen has pitted and is on brand new softs.
And is nowhere.
And is
five cars behind Hamilton.
Five cars behind Hamilton, right. Yeah, they say flying restart, five cars behind Hamilton. Hamilton is on the hards, but we're thinking, great, there's five cars between them. They're all back markers. They have to move pretty quickly.
Yeah, they were lap cars that just happened to be in that position, right? In the safety car, all the cars close up behind the safety car. But if there's a lap car between you, there's a lap car between you.
Now, so it takes time to overtake it, and it's not optimal racing conditions, as it were, without them. So also without those cars, Verstappen would be way closer to Hamilton from the start. So he'd have more time to catch up, less ground, essentially. And then the stewards come in and make another quick time decision. And this is where I would criticize them, because, like, make up your fucking mind beforehand. The constant back and forth. This was really confusing again. Same as last weekend. Very confusing calls that are kind of inconsistent with some of the regulations, the way they're even spelled out. I'll let you get into that next part.
Oh, what, right now?
What the stewards
announced. Well, not even the stewards. So, or this is also the stewards. So we're entering the final. So the final sector of the second to last lap, and presumptuously then entering the final lap. The scene was the following, which is Hamilton was leading. Everyone's bunched up behind the safety car. Verstappen is in second position, but not second position on the track, because there's lap cars in between. Now, normally procedure would be for lap cars to unlap themselves. So to drive past the safety car, do a lap, and the race, not even catch up, but the race starts without them. So the safety car might do another lap, and then the race starts with or without them, whatever. So this, at first, the first message that comes is, lap cars will not overtake the safety car, which is that decision is made if the track isn't safe for lap cars to drive without the observation of the safety car, is what that decision is usually made for. Shortly thereafter, so we during all of this, we get team principals on the phone to Michael Massey, the race director, and complaining and blah, blah. Well, we'll not get into
the usual petty bullshit.
Yeah, people are talking, people are shouting, adrenaline is high, right? It's entering the final lap of the Grand Prix
of the season. And they're tied on points and position one and two.
Verstappen, for the first time in the race, is in a position where he might challenge Hamilton.
Yeah.
But there's cars between them. But it said they aren't overtaking the safety car. Then the message comes, the cars between those two get to overtake the safety car.
And I want to mention that everything that you just mentioned happened in a span of about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Those two major decisions that really changed the outcome of five drivers and how they have to act quickly, and the other two to prepare and react to that.
Yeah.
It all happened in 40 seconds. They had another 5 seconds or 10 seconds to get used to what had just happened.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. So the back markers, I believe it was Sainz, Lando,
it was Ocon, I think.
It was Ocon, Alonso, one
Norris,
one McLaren and one Ferrari, I think it was.
Norris and Leclerc. Yeah.
Norris and Leclerc?
Yeah, because Sainz got P3.
Yeah, where was Ricardo by the end of it?
I think pretty far down.
Yeah.
He didn't have
we'll
get to that.
This is
more important right now.
You're right.
So the safety car announces it's going to end.
Same lap, which also is unusual.
Yeah, so we're heading into the final like two corners of the previous lap, and the safety car is ready to go. And this is where the psycho games start between Verstappen and Hamilton, because the law or the racing regulations clearly state that you cannot, under a safety car, pass first place or overtake at all or in any way, right? Like, it's very clear cut what and what you can't do. And I think Verstappen throughout the season, I've noticed, and I have to point this out, I think he knows the regulations almost better than any other driver, because he is the closest to racing on that like edge.
Legal edge.
Yeah, okay. And I think like he's always so close to, because he's drives in such a way, but he's managed to master the rules and be able to just drive on that fine line. I have major respect to that, which leads up to the final two corners being Hamilton going very, very, very slow and Verstappen basically next to him.
Yeah.
They're basically nose to nose the whole way. And then we get to the final straight and Hamilton floors it when he decides to kick the start or the restart again. And well, Verstappen has the way better tires. So it takes him, I don't think he gets it in the first turn, but two turns later. So
well, he gets it into the first major braking zone.
The first major braking zone.
Yeah, which is turn four.
And then there's a couple really good turns of racing. And maybe you want to get into them detail, but they were side by side for a very long time as well.
Yeah, I want to mention this because it was something I talked about earlier with my parents when I was watching the race. I think we should be careful with, you know, after the race and after everything happens, whatever. We should be careful with believing the narrative that Hamilton was a, you know, helpless passenger in this final fight. Because Hamilton outraced Verstappen down the pit straight after the last corner of the previous lap into the first corner. Hamilton had, you know, Hamilton got the start down. Hamilton managed to get past there.
But that's due to the fact that he decided when to start, so he didn't have the reaction time needed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that was but a still,
clear advantage.
But still, have. Verstappen was physically next to him, and he still managed to outrace that. And yeah, maybe some of that is down to reaction time, but he still managed to do it. You know,
we saw that like a tenth of a second in difference of reaction time yields almost half a second down the straight earlier in the race.
Yep.
So now it's less because obviously the tire disadvantage, and props for him being able to control it that long. But and, still, there's the reaction time. So I do credit it mostly to that.
And getting then into turn four. Verstappen pulls a move earlier in the lap than I think most people expected. I was expecting him to wait for the next straight and then go to the next one. But he sees a gap and he goes in there. And I think even Hamilton wasn't expecting him there. So Hamilton was expecting to have another turn of, you know, relative ease and relative dominance where he could prepare for the next straight. No, Verstappen goes in there, overtakes Hamilton essentially. And they go into the next corner. They go onto the next straight, which is followed by a sharp S turn, so left right, in which Verstappen makes a mistake and slightly and runs wide, giving Hamilton the chance. And this is again, Hamilton wasn't a passenger in this. He fought, and he nearly had Verstappen.
But
they go down the next straight, and Hamilton is next to him, going into the next braking zone, and just outbreaks himself a little.
And even on coming into the final straight, Verstappen slips again and has quite a big slide where my heart stopped for a second.
The final corner of the final lap.
And Hamilton was clearly back, though, because two corners previously when they were going around the two stadiums, then their gap was big. But I grant you that. I fully agree. Like Hamilton obviously had the disadvantage in the whole thing, though. That's why people give the narrative of being a passenger, because he basically was fighting the inevitable. Like similarly to Verstappen with Racing Gods, the whole amount of the race where everything kind of seemed to go against them until it didn't.
Yep.
And credit to Hamilton for making it so close, because I didn't think it was going to be a full lap. I thought it was going to be one corner or max one sector. And then the rest, easy. And then it's like a 2 second difference. No.
Yeah.
I think it was still less than a second at the end.
No, it was 2.2.
It was two.
Hamilton pretty much, I don't want to say gave up, but had lost after that final major braking zone.
Exactly.
Where he still challenged. And then Hamilton was besides Verstappen. Verstappen was on the inside, and Hamilton essentially needed to brake better and later in order to carry more speed through the corner. And go around Verstappen for the inside of the next turn. And he just didn't do it.
And this
he just didn't manage it. The car didn't turn in well enough. He didn't have the tires. He didn't have the aero. He didn't have the brakes for it. And he just kind of pulled out towards the side, got slid out towards the side of it, and Verstappen managed it.
And this is where I want to credit both drivers, because this is exactly a moment like where they were side by side in the final, like, four corners of the final race of the deciding Grand Prix of the season that would break records for really anyone who wins it of these two. And like such a big moment. And the narrative the last 3-4 weeks has been, they're definitely going to crash if they have the opportunity. So, everybody's been saying, no, I can't believe they would do that, but I'm pretty sure they will. All the experts have essentially been saying that, which is horseshit. And here, both drivers, and major props to Hamilton, because he at that point had nothing to lose. He could have just and like hoped to like come out better than Verstappen if he slid into him. No, he didn't. He fought it fair, and like respect to that.
Yeah. In the end, the so obviously
racing won today.
Obviously, Verstappen went on to become the world drivers champion.
He won the race. He did not crash
Formula One in 2021. The season 2020-2021. So major props. So Verstappen is now a first-time world champion.
Which feels weird to say.
Incredible, right? Yeah. I still can't really believe it, mainly partially because of the all the things that went down after. But Verstappen wins the race on track.
And he's 24.
And yeah. And I gotta give a lot of props to both drivers in this. In the end, both in the beginning of the race, throughout the race, and in the final corner, all the controversy side of the safety car, this was a pretty clean race. Yeah. You know, okay, you have the turn six incident with Hamilton in the beginning, but it was deemed to be fine. It had gone fine. Similar decisions had been made before, there was no touching.
Well, that's an interesting point, actually, because Abu Dhabi was different this year than it was in previous years because they made changes that were supposed to make it safer and more clean racing, which actually people complained about initially because there were less overtaking opportunities.
No, there were more. It was made to be more overtaking, but people were complaining because...
Then I misunderstood that because it used to be they built the hairpin banked turn, mm-hmm. right? And that used to be a double chicane, I think. So that's... I guess the hairpin turn is a nice overtaking spot, but the chicane is a
chicane.
Did I recall that wrong?
I mean, the chicane was where a lot of overtaking went into, but essentially, yeah, I mean, it was there before, but the hairpin is a much better overtaking opportunity. You go into it faster. There's also between the chicane and the next chicane that then happened was less space this way.
And the racing line is bigger.
This way, the overall track was a lot faster. The braking zones were a lot harder, which makes for better overtaking.
That's fair. Anyway, it was a clean race with those changes. They positively affected the race. That was going to be my wrong conclusion anyway.
And to get back to Perez, under that same safety car, they had pitted Perez. And what I was confused by that, right? And in the end, what it turned out to be, or what I saw online, what the decision was based on was that Perez's engine wasn't looking good. And it was looking like there's a good chance that the engine might explode, essentially. not explode, but like fail. Yeah, yeah. And they didn't want to risk Perez stopping on track and prolonging the safety car. That's why they pulled him out.
Really? Oh, they didn't want to finish it. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was a safety measure, precaution. It was a smart move.
Incredible, right? I was so confused.
But like going into the weekend too, it was clear that Perez didn't matter. Like, I don't get why their plan Z wasn't Perez to just like be so aggressively defensive that he ends up kind of damaging Hamilton.
You can't do that.
Well, it's a conspiracy in the end, right? The way I say it. But like, I was half expecting that to be like the worst possible ever case scenario.
No.
Because even what you could disqualify the driver from the season, you could disqualify the team, but that doesn't disqualify Verstappen because he wasn't in on it. It's like the McLaren scandal. Like they got their points.
No, it's much more like the Renault scandal, which got so many people fired.
But not the drivers.
Not Alonso, but the other guy got a forever race ban.
Yeah, because he was in on it.
Yeah, but Alonso.
Oh, right, but Perez would be in on it. Fair. Yeah. No, that doesn't work. Never mind. I didn't suggest it, but I was half expecting it for some reason. I guess the way the media has covered this has been so intense. You think of the darkest possible scenarios. So we get to the final standings and Verstappen wins the race and also the championship with that as they were tied going into it. Hamilton comes in second. Both of them amazing racing today. Hamilton pulling through on that hard tire the whole way. One of the very few drivers that did a one-stop strategy in the end, I think.
Yep.
And P3 was Sainz, who had a really good race and used the safety cars as well to his opportunity, he absolutely used them well.
Yeah, we got to talk about Leclerc also, his teammate who got a bit screwed over by the safety car. The safety car didn't work out for him.
And he ended up battling in like the round 15 spot for quite a while, but a few laps lost a lot of time. P4, Tsunoda, my personal favorite of the day. He's had a tough season, Getting used to Formula One, and I think after the first few races had a dip in confidence and also lost his touch with his car and stuff. That's where I think Gasly has been a really good partner for him as teammates, who finished, he had a strong run up until he pitted, I think. I don't know where exactly Gasly
finished. Gasly finished pretty far up there as well. Gasly finished fifth. Yeah.
They got 4 and 5.
Yeah.
What a day.
Really, really good result for AlphaTauri. Not enough to overtake Alpine in the standings.
No, because Alpine, they were racing with Alpine the whole race. That was a very exciting battle too.
Yeah, and they were winning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it was very exciting because there were several overtakes between those. And then Ocon and Alonso were battling as well for several laps.
Yeah.
Which was fun to see. Yeah, and then what's the rest of the board look like?
Behind Gasly in fifth, we have Bottas in sixth, Norris in seventh. Disappointing for him, especially because it means that in the overall standing, he was beaten by Carlos Sainz now. Carlos Sainz got that fourth spot in the Drivers' Championship.
I think the fifth.
The fifth?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Paris. Yeah, the fifth. Sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and Norris ended up getting P6.
Yeah, so Norris beat Leclerc, which was his main rival for a long time, and then got beaten by Sainz, both of them.
Which shows how good Ferrari has been and how cool it is to have two very strong drivers, mm-hmm. because they've been neck and neck all season mm-hmm. within like a few points. It's crazy. Only in the last few races has that delta been a bit bigger.
Yeah, and then behind Norris in seventh, we have Alonso in eighth, Ocon in ninth, Leclerc in 10, and then Vettel, Ricciardo, Stroll, Schumacher, and then people who didn't finish the race. Or I guess Perez technically, no, he DNF'd, but he still got 15th spot because he finished X amount of laps within the end of the race. So he was he was classified as having finished the race, or not having finished the race, but as a position in the final standing. It doesn't matter. Nikita Mazepin didn't start the race because he contracted COVID. So
we hope he's okay.
Yeah.
I also read a fun fact on Schumacher real quick with that incident with Latifi, which caused the final safety car, which without Latifi, Max would not be winning. So thank you, Latifi, for messing up the corner there.
Pretty sure he didn't do it.
I read something that there was something about Schumacher and Latifi and the defending to block essentially his father's record. That's why he did it.
to get Max
the win. So
to I be call clear, absolute bullshit.
The record that would be broken here is that that Hamilton, if he would have won this championship, he would be the all-time leader, breaking the tie between him and Schumacher, currently at 7 each. The tiebreaker right now is that Schumacher won those 7 in a shorter time span than Hamilton.
Earlier.
Yeah. So it wouldn't matter. So technically he's first, and Hamilton needs another one to beat that record. So maybe it's all down to Mick keeping his dad's legacy alive.
Maybe. I don't think so.
I doubt it. But that was some good racing by him. Those last two laps, the way he was battling with Latifi was actually really fascinating. I'm sad they didn't cover that more, but there was a lot going on in the last few laps.
Especially in the front, dude.
And this event went on after the race too. It kept going for quite a while because my heartbeat for the last like 10 minutes was mad. I was shouting and screaming, and I'm probably gonna have to apologize to my next door neighbors tomorrow get some complaints. But I'm watching the post-race show and they're interviewing the drivers and they're giving their season reviews and, you know, personal and looking forward to
Mercedes
next season.
Isn't really present.
That, because where is Mercedes? We see in the back of the camera screen, they're walking over and they're walking into the steward's office. Also, Max Verstappen has been summoned to the steward's office because apparently he overtook Verstappen, Hamilton, during the safety car, which is what we had highlighted earlier. And there are clear replays where Verstappen is further ahead.
Slightly ahead.
His wing, if you took like a photo finish kind of thing, Verstappen would be finishing first.
Yeah. Which in the end, because it's the easier of the two to talk about. In the end, they decided, he was slightly ahead at that point, but he immediately braked and was right behind. So
his intent was never to overtake.
At the point where, and I can't believe I'm saying it, at the point where Hamilton is brake checking him sort of into maybe overtaking him there, you know, he immediately, like, what are you going
to
do?
I hope Hamilton listens to this episode.
Man, if Hamilton listens to this, Jesus Christ, man.
Shout out to you, Lewis.
What an incredible season. It's I'm genuinely so sorry you didn't win it, because you would have deserved it.
And this would have been such a great eighth title too. Yeah. It wouldn't have been like a pure dominance, no challenge. Yeah. Like this would have shown, like, re-up that. Yeah. And it did to some extent, because to put up that massive fight, it's amazing.
Racing wise, Hamilton won today, but he didn't win.
Yeah.
And that's racing.
And to be fair, there have been several races this season where that has been vice versa.
Yeah.
Verstappen won racing wise, but didn't win.
Yeah.
And it seems like the luck was just on racing gods decided for Verstappen. And
man, that final safety.
Yeah.
Car.
So
incredible.
Mercedes walked into the steward's office, protested A, what we just talked about.
And B,
maybe you want to summarize this.
Well, so there's an interesting clause in the rule that states that cars that have been lapped before the safety car happened, any car that had done so would have the opportunity to unlap itself by overtaking the safety car, and the safety car would then come in the next lap, is essentially what the rule says. So the contradiction here was that not all cars had unlapped themselves. And the thought was that, okay, maybe if all cars had unlapped themselves, they wouldn't have had enough time to run another lap behind the safety car. Additionally, by that rule, maybe the safety car should have had another lap after the unlapping, right? So cars unlap themselves, drive in front of the safety car, go around. The safety car continues on track for one more lap, which would have given us a finish behind the safety car. Now, that is what Mercedes protested. And yes, that rule exists, both in the sporting and the other regulations, whatever. There's two sets of regulations. It's confusing. And one, it's 39-12, and then the other one's like 48-12. Yeah. Don't quote me on it. Go look it up yourself. It's a long document.
48-12.
Yeah, it's 48-12, and it's 39-12. It's in both. Cheers, by the way.
Wait, we got a viewership. I hope you heard that. Cheers.
So Mercedes goes and protests it. And before we get into the controversy of that and the results, I want to say, before the race, the one thing I was saying, I mean, I was saying, okay, Red Bull will probably go for the two-stop, blah, 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 and Hamilton is looking stronger and all that jazz. I was saying the one thing I don't want to see is a race that is decided by a penalty, a steward decision, anything of that.
And that was also from the narrative that was being built in the last few weeks of they're definitely going to crash each other out if they have the opportunity. Yeah. They wouldn't necessarily, that would essentially end up being the stewardship decides the championship, right? Because whoever initiated that such a brutal contact would essentially be punished or not punished, and then it would end up on their desk. Now, does the stewardship still get the credit over who won here? Did they decide what happened on track, or did racing win today? Or was it a decision because of a non-decision?
Yeah.
Like, does this kind of non-decision also have the same impact of decision, like, if you sided with it?
Yeah.
I think it's the same way, right? Yeah. It goes both ways.
The decision to get the safety car and give them a lap of racing put an advantage on Verstappen, because he was on the softer tire. So by pure, you know, looking at the possibilities, Verstappen had the advantage. Then again, Hamilton, it's not like Hamilton has never won a race while being at advantage, right? And it's not like
that's racing.
It's not like either of them have, you know, in Austin, in Texas, Hamilton had the clear advantage over Verstappen, and Verstappen stayed ahead. Mm. It's down to the racing. I've said it before and I will say it again. Hamilton wasn't a passenger in this. Mm. He put up a fantastic fight and he nearly fucking had it.
It came down to the last lap?
It came down to the last lap on the last race, the last major braking zone. Had Hamilton gotten that braking just a bit more right, he could have won this. You know. Had they said, okay, we'll have three more laps, sure. The advantage Verstappen had there would have been clear. But one lap, I think, yes, maybe advantage slightly Verstappen, but Jesus Christ, you can't say that Hamilton was a passenger in this.
No, but also I would say it's not decided on track, or it was decided on track and not by the stewards, because part of racing is some of these like decisions and investigations, and it's part of the game, and it's part of the way that sometimes those decisions or non-decisions go in your favor or not.
Yeah.
And that's just part of it. And I don't think this was a major like invasive decision or non-decision thing.
The decision by Michael Massey who as the race director made the call for the safety car was, we are finishing this race as a race.
And reflecting, to be fair, in the moment of time. And I think if I were to be asked my opinion on what I would have done in that moment, in that decision time, reflecting back on turn six in the first lap, that was one thing where I was like, man, I think I would have called that differently. I think I would have ordered Hamilton just to give the position back.
Which then the question is, would that have mattered? Because Hamilton was a half a second faster.
Exactly. And then right now I'm thinking, okay, well, it didn't really matter. And it wouldn't have mattered because the difference was 10 seconds at some point. Like, all of that wouldn't have really changed. So yeah. I kind of give credit to this, or I don't think that that was a major bad decision, because it kept the fight going. And that was actually pretty interesting from a viewership standpoint. From a consistency standpoint, maybe not the best advertising, but it worked out well, I guess.
I'll say the 2008 championship was decided by Hamilton overtaking Timo Glock, who was on slick tires in the rain in Brazil on a lap where he shouldn't have been. You know, it was a gamble. Hamilton overtook him in the last major corner in Brazil and got the championship that way.
It happened.
Which also, you know, there's a thousand things. There's a thousand of, yeah, it could have happened. It would have happened. It should have happened.
It didn't happen.
In the end, we finished this race as a race.
And that's better than just in the safety car or all this. And even the other decision was, no, let them race.
You know,
let them figure this out on the track. He won't give the position back because technically he was first going in, and it was quite of a big attempt, very aggressive. So,
yeah. No, I'll say two more things.
Okay.
I'll say two more things on it. And I want to make it clear, I'm not trying to defend the philosophy of, you know, do they race, do they not race? And was Massey overstating it or overusing his power? I don't want to talk about the philosophy there. I'll say two things, which is Mercedes had the opportunity to pit first. Mercedes had the chance to put Hamilton on softs before Red Bull had the chance to put Verstappen on softs.
And they didn't.
And they chose not to for the reason that it would have lost them track position, because Verstappen would have then stayed out, which in the end would have given Hamilton the clear advantage in this.
Absolutely.
And I think the decision, the safety car decision would have stayed the same. The second thing I want to say is, you could also argue that had the cars not unlapped themselves, you know, they would have been blue flagged. It would have cost Verstappen on the main straight. It would have cost him a 10th, and he would have been right there where he was now. Maybe a corner later. You know, we'll never know. There could have been, would have been. There. What I'm trying to say is the decision about the safety car wasn't a decision to screw anyone over. It was a decision, in my opinion, to race. And I would have also done it differently. I would have red flagged the race at that point, given everyone a chance to start where they should have, and let it play out as it plays out.
I think they should have just stayed with their final decision, but said that immediately.
Yeah.
Like that's fine, because there's precedent enough to make that decision and then say, go by, you're not qualified for the start. You can go catch up and we'll figure it out without you. And then you have it there and that's fine. And I don't think then Mercedes would be complaining much, to be honest, because like another thing to mention is, and this was kind of weird, and I get the emotion and everything's running high, but team principals are essentially begging and not negotiating, but because of maybe what happened at last race, and last race's theme was kind of coming out of it, was that it was really odd that the stewards were, or that Michael Massey was negotiating with the team principals on what kind of punishments they may or may not get depending on their actions. And it seemed like from that, they thought they had more room to like what they could say. So like Toto Wolff was coming in and saying, no, Michael, you can't do this to us. It's not possible that you do this to us. It's just not fair. You like in a whole new desperation tone that I hadn't heard before. And that kind of went ugly real quick, because you're like, man, we want objective decisions here.
Yeah. And then we come back to what we were talking about before. The race is over. Verstappen is crowned. And Mercedes also protests the decision-making process with the safety car. And so Verstappen isn't crowned completely, because he might be decrowned.
Yeah.
And the race is taken off the track. The decision for the championship is taken off the track. And this is where some of the steam leaves me is, did Verstappen win this championship on the track now? He did. But with all the stewards, with all the decisions, with all the Massey decisions, with the hearing and all that, now there was another decision to be made, which was, who do we punish Red Bull, or do we reset the time to where the last lap never happened and we have the final classification based on that? And now it wasn't a decision anymore of this person outraced this person on the track. It was off the track. What do we do? No, we keep it or we don't keep it. And it'll go on, you know.
I can understand, though, and I would expect nothing less from Red Bull. If this championship had gone the other way with the exact same decisions, Red Bull would also be going
for sure.
Complaining. And it's just partly nature of the sport. But I guess reflecting on the season, something that has come out of it is that people think they can get even more and the pettiness has increased.
Yeah.
Which leads me to my next point. Who is the real winner of this season, of this race, especially this race? I mean, Verstappen gets a nice salary boost. Red Bull wins quite a bit of championship money there.
Oh, no. Well, only for a second.
But who's the actual winner and who will get the most money from this? It's clearly Netflix. Drive to Survive is going to be amazing.
Well, or crazy. Last season was kind of, they had a lot to talk about and they kind of focused on a bunch of weird shit.
Well, I think it's hard with all the coverage. All they have to do is copy the coverage for the year and it's already going to be pretty epic because just seeing a like 10-hour summary of like footage of the season will just be amazing because look inside McLaren's garage, we know that the Netflix crew was in the McLaren garage with exclusive access when they got P1 and 2.
Yeah.
Amazing. We know that they've been in a garage for every race of the season, and we know the coverage has been mostly on Lewis and Max since week one.
Yeah.
So there can't be much that goes wrong. We also know that one of them really likes Netflix Drive to Survive and the other does not. So I expect this to be a very Hamilton-biased show.
And I'll say that Verstappen has said he will fully not appear in the next Drive to Survive season.
In personal interviews. They'll still cover him because his rights don't belong to
him. They'll cover him, but he will not be interviewed by them.
Yeah, which is also funny. Yeah. So I wonder if that switches the narrative of the show in terms of... Hamilton should have won.
Yeah.
And it'll be covered that way.
But as it stands now, Max Verstappen is the driver's world champion of Formula One this season.
As of 20 minutes before you arrived here, so about an hour ago, the FIA stewards officially rejected all protests.
Yeah.
And therefore, they have announced Max Verstappen did win. So he has officially won. Which, I don't know how many appeals can still be thrown around.
Mercedes is going to appeal appealing the rejection, and it is likely going to end up in front of the COA, I think it's called. I don't know what that stands for. Court of RE something. But it's essentially the International Racing Sport Court or International Sport Court or whatever. So who knows what'll happen? It'd be an even bigger disappointment that
I would like it to finish this way.
Yeah, it'd be an even bigger disappointment now that, you know, so the decision has been made on the track by racing, then it has been made off the track by the stewards' decision. And you know, it'd be a real shame if it would be taken off the track again, you know, is what I think about it.
Yeah, I think it's fine. And to be honest, if we look at the, I think it's fair that we have a little forward view of what's to come next season.
Yeah,
looking at it. Like seeing this rivalry, this rivalry has been built over the last few years and it's come to a crescendo, an awesome crescendo this season. But next season, coming into completely new regulations, new car, new everything, apart from the engine, essentially, the engine means that those two teams will probably still be battling fairly high up from one aspect of it. And we can share those opinions in a second, but these two drivers are very, very good.
Yeah.
And I think, and I expect their rivalry to continue. And I don't think that Hamilton will be battling for P6 for the next few seasons. I highly doubt it, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see. I hope they keep it this way because it'll build a really good back and forth. Because I don't think Hamilton's done winning championships at all.
Yeah.
He's made a couple more mistakes this year than last year or the last few years, but he was under more pressure. So I expect more good things for him to come. I think he will still win that eighth title, to be honest.
Yeah, probably.
If you ask me to put money on it, I'll put money on it.
Time speaks towards it, huh?
Absolutely.
But let's save that for the end of year summary as well.
That is right.
To the future.
It's a good time to announce that.
But yeah, so just to talk about it a bit more. Oh yeah, great. I have the noise of the street in the background of the podcast.
Yeah,
people will love that.
It's basically like chirping jungle noises, but uh-huh. Realistic.
So let's talk a bit about the final classification. So we've talked about the top seven, I think, which is Verstappen, Hamilton, Bottas, Perez, Sainz, Norris, Leclerc. And now let's talk a bit more about how this quite amazing year ended for the rest of the drivers behind that. So Daniel Ricciardo in eighth, interesting season. Not as good as many people, including myself, were expecting. I think I bet on him finishing third in the Drivers' Championship, which didn't happen. But finished eighth, had a stronger beginning of the second half of the season. Then the McLaren just fell through a bit for a couple of races. And then, yeah, he had an okay finish to the year.
If we're going through a bit of expectations mm-hmm. as well, McLaren's general team expectations were, I think, a lot higher than, I mean, they were going for P3 in the constructors, essentially, yeah. And, well, they lost to Ferrari big time.
In the end, Ferrari, very much the weaker car of the two in the first half, very much the first quarter, and then just really coming back after their engine upgrade.
They made a really big change there, and that really ended up pulling it through.
Yeah.
McLaren had some bad luck too, to be honest.
Yeah, especially towards the end.
Norris he's just had four bad races in a row. Like, yeah. Just bad luck, not even bad driving.
Yeah.
Even today, we go into turn one and he has to go wide because of, I don't know what it was in the end, but that already gave up his P3 that he got through his good qualifying. Yeah. So it's too bad.
Yeah.
But I expect good things from them and I think they'll be a good team to record.
Contender for Ferrari. Yeah.
I feel like we're already doing season for review right now.
Yeah, but let's. We can also get. Yeah, I mean, we can talk about it a bit, and then in the next episode, we'll do it much more extensively. Then after that, Gasly, cracking the 100 points, which I was really impressed by in an AlphaTauri, man.
That's amazing.
Gasly, I would rate as one of the most competitive drivers of the year.
Oh, he needs a good car.
In a, no offense, worse car than a lot of his competitors.
That's really good.
Yeah. Then Alonso, coming back to Formula One this year. Strong season from him, I'd say. Not quite the Alonso of old, but definitely a super strong second half of the season. It took him a bit to get used to it.
But he's worked his way very well.
Yeah. I mean, he's beaten his teammate, Ocon, who granted had a year of break, but, you know, between this season and the one before. But who was still a fucking Formula One driver in times where Alonso wasn't, who didn't have a three-year break.
And Ocon has had one of the better rookie years far in the last 20 years or so.
Followed by Verstappen, by Vettel, who did well for the car he was in, I think, once he got a bit used to it, but had a generally uneventful season. Stroll, same, I guess. Not much.
Aston Martin, also similar to McLaren, just not great, and they probably fell off way more than people expected just because of the image they're pushing, the big money they have.
Yeah.
Also a team I expect quite a bit of.
Yeah, hopefully it'd be great.
Be one of the big surprises.
Yeah. Followed by Tsunoda, who got roughly a third, if not more, of his points of the entire season in this race.
Which is awesome.
Who had a great start to the season, then fell off very quickly, and then came back in the last few races, I must say. Followed by, I think, one of the big people of the season, one of the main talking points of a long time of the season, George Russell. Who didn't score the first points for William in a long time, but who was definitely because that was Latifi first in Hungary, but who was definitely, you know, the Williams driver, whose hype kind of fell off a bit after the Mercedes announcement, but who will obviously be partnering Lewis Hamilton next year. So
that'll be exciting.
A lot of things, a lot of expectations on the young man.
And that's a topic we can get into a bit deeper in terms of Russell, and people are expecting a similar, which is almost unfair, but a similar thing to happen as Hamilton did to Alonso in his first year. And man, that would be crazy.
Yeah.
But they're going to have two top drivers next year.
Yeah. Followed by Raikkonen, his last season in Formula One, 10 points. I don't think we need to talk about him too much because I don't think he'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Followed by Latifi.
his livery was,
we'll leave you alone now. Yeah.
So we will.
Followed by Latifi. 7 points, which I think he scored over two races, I think. So 2 points finishes for him. I mean, this was his second season in Formula One. Hasn't convinced super much, but he's getting up there this season.
He's been similar. He's improving. Nazi, but he's had a better year this year.
Yeah, and he'll be partnering Alexander Albon next year. So that'll be interesting with the Williams having its first big chance in a regulation change to really kind of get back to form. Followed by the three drivers who scored 0 points. Mick Schumacher, overall, I mean, look, let's be real. The Haas wasn't there. He didn't do anything this season. But he finished the races and he had a rookie season and it was pretty good. But considering where the car was, he only really was contending with his teammate, which he beat, and sometimes by 0 points. They're equal on points.
But timing wise, yeah. Race per race, yeah. Qualifying, speed, pace.
Yeah. Outraced him. Yeah. I'd say he had a good rookie season. We can't talk about much there. But I'm definitely excited to see how he does next year.
I think I would title both Haas drivers, Mazepin as well, as like half rookie season. It doesn't count as a full rookie season.
They weren't contending for anything.
Well, even because next year, looking into next year, it's a complete change. So they're going to have to get used to it. And they've gotten used to the people they're driving against and kind of the speeds. Yeah. And, you know, but a lot of it's going to change now. So they're going to have another rookie season again and a hopefully competitive car, which will, you know, if they're skilled, they can, you know.
Yeah.
Be, you know, a few places on.
Yeah. Followed by Robert Kubica, who only attended two races, but still got 20th with Alfa Romeo. Obviously a great driver of the past. It was great to see him back in the races where he was. And I think he did pretty well in Hungary because it was such a chaotic race as well. Didn't score points, but still strong. Followed by Mazepin, who also had a rookie season. Also in the Haas, so fairness-wise, I mean, he got outraced by his teammate quite a bit, but it's not like he had a car with which he would be in contention for anything anyways.
But also, to be fair, the difference between Schumacher and Mazepin was more obvious in the first half of the season. And in the second half, Mazepin did match him in pace and a couple...
Yeah, did get a bit closer and then the last few races.
Did, I think, beat him in qualifying a few times. If I'm not mistaken, not many, but he was a lot closer.
Yeah.
He closed that gap, to say the least.
And then in the last few races, kind of fell off a bit again, but still, rookie season. What do you expect? And constructors, Mercedes won that, so they got the nice cash boost.
In a row.
Yep. Also incredible, right? Mercedes, I think, very clearly the car and manufacturer of the hybrid era so far.
It's unbelievable.
The turbo hybrid era, I should call it.
Eight in a row.
Yeah.
German efficiency at its finest,
man. Red Bull, they finished second in the constructors 2 years in a row now, I think, or three maybe, who knows. Followed by Ferrari, interestingly, again. Big points drop, less than, 260 points less roughly than Red Bull. But still, impressive for where they were last year. McLaren, who I think many expected to finish third. Alpine, strong second half for them to still get fifth. I think they wanted to probably fight for fourth, but that didn't happen. Alfa Tauri, shame they only finished sixth. They were really looking like strong fifth place.
This was funny because I think halfway through the race or so, they showed the cameras inside the Alfa Tauri pit lane.
Yeah.
And man, who is it? The guy that every year he predicts that they're going to get fifth, and he always
their team boss.
I forget who his name is, but they basically zoomed in on him, and he had both of his fingers crossed to the max, and they were completely white because of the pressure he was putting on.
Yeah.
Just hoping for a miracle to make up the difference to Alpine.
Yeah,
and they had two races where Alpine just knocked them out.
Yeah.
Two amazing finishes. Alonso got a podium and Ocon then finished fourth.
Yeah.
With Alonso being, I think, pretty high in that race too. So even though the final race was a really good result for them, P4 and 5, which is amazing. I mean, that's P3 essentially in terms of teams.
Yeah.
Or 2.5 if you want to
really count science. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Really well done.
Really great.
They've had a very good season.
Yeah. I'd actually say AlphaTauri probably had
Actually, you know what? No, I can't say that because a lot of teams had very good seasons.
But I do think that I read something about AlphaTauri in terms of their future. Mm-hmm. The last few seasons, and especially this one, showed that they can, with the right drivers and with the right lineup and the focus, they're completely separate of Red Bull.
Yeah.
And they've separated themselves, and they don't like to be seen as that sister or like junior team
yeah.
anymore, that like it used to be with Toro Rosso, yeah. more prevalent at least. With this new rule change, they might be able to have some separate knowledge from Red Bull that they don't share. And that could yield quite a good thing because yeah. the one thing they have in common is the engine. And that's like Honda's done an amazing job on that. And they're going to get full access to the Red Bull powertrain company that's coming in, right? So I see a very bright future for them.
Yeah, I'd really hope so, especially for Gasly and Tsunoda. Tsunoda, who I gotta admit, has from the very beginning been a driver I really liked.
Me too.
You know, there was a lot of controversy around him in the beginning of like, oh, he swears and shouts so much and he calls people idiot. I was like, yeah, but it's nice to see a rookie who's, you know, got some balls.
Yeah, you
know,
fun, who's, man.
I mean, yes, it wasn't good for him, but it didn't, you know, it endeared him to me rather than the opposite in the beginning.
He's lovable.
Yeah.
He's lovable.
And I think he's really, you know, if he continues the pace he had in the last few races, I mean, granted, he didn't finish anywhere strong in the two races before this, but he had strong qualifying pace. So if he really finds his own, I think, you know, he'd be a really good complement to Gasly and maybe more in the future.
Well, and his reputation coming into this year
was very good.
Was very, very good. And a lot of people expected a very good rookie season from him.
Yeah.
Like, they had almost like unmanageable expectations
that
you couldn't really reach.
Yeah.
So he did underperform in some sense that he had some bad luck and then he kind of lost touch of the car, but he had some really good performances. And there was some, like, I think the last four races or so, I think every time I have mentioned Tsunoda, I've told you, man, I loved what he did. And like, I think two or three of those, he didn't finish or he had a really bad issue or he had to go to the pits and took a long time to stop. And it sucked because he's pulled some amazing battles with Hamilton alone this season.
In Turkey.
He had like two or three really cool,
like
racing moments, and he obviously eventually lost out to Hamilton just because, but he's really held his own ground, I think.
Yeah.
He's a very good racer.
Yeah. And then seventh in the constructors was Aston Martin. I think we touched on most of what we can talk about with them. Two relatively strong drivers, a pretty weak car comparatively. High expectations going into this season, high expectation going into next season, but this season they didn't really go anywhere with it.
Yeah, that was disappointing to see because they've proven in the past that they're a team that can build a very good car on a small budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that they would be able to have a more competitive car.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens next season.
And then an eighth,
Williams. Shout out to Sir Frank Williams, who passed away recently. He's the legend of the sport, built this team.
Let's be real, a bit before my time, but you know, the things you hear of him was...
Man, and you like recently, the Formula One channel brought out a nice like summary of his whole life and everything, and why he is such an icon in the racing world, which a lot of people in our age, like at our age level, don't really understand or haven't experienced or witnessed. And he just built this team from the ground up, and even after like his passion for racing, he had a bad accident that cost him his mobility, and he still has that passion, and he's been going around. And a few years ago, Lewis Hamilton drove him around, I think Silverstone, which really great video and really fun. So it was really cool to see. Like, I don't know, it's similar with Senna, because it's someone who died really before I was interested, or before I was alive and before I really knew Formula One.
Yeah.
But when I got into it, you kind of fall in love with, or you really start admiring a character, and you're like, oh man, I wish I would have kind of known more about that in that time.
Yeah, and again, I watched the Peter Windsor tribute to him, and I think you got a appreciation for the kind of person he was told to be. So shout out to him. I think it's nice to see maybe the rise of Williams again in the year where he then unfortunately passed. Maybe that was a comfort.
It would be really nice to see if they had some sort of permanent livery.
Yeah,
it's all dedicated to him next season, and I can see them doing quite well because Alex Albon, I think we can have pretty high expectations for him.
Yeah, strong driver. He should F1 experience.
I think if he doesn't manage to be his teammate Latifi next year, then that's an issue for his rep. Like that's what he has to at least do that.
Yeah.
Because as we said, Latifi's okay, but Albon was, you know, in Red Bull and he was challenging for race wins and stuff. And had a couple instances where he unluckily got beat. I don't know. I feel like he had underperformance and bad luck, and it kind of
sucked. Bad luck first and then underperformance. Yeah,
it kind of sucked. So I have high hopes for him actually.
Yeah, I agree.
Next season, and maybe he's a guy that can really start carrying Williams, and maybe we see a similar story with him and Williams as we did with Gasly and AlphaTauri.
That'd be nice.
Be really cool.
Yeah.
To see AlphaTauri and Williams maybe battling. Yeah. What a cool matchup with that with Alpine. Like, that'd be epic.
Yeah. And then second to last, Alfa Romeo, who are obviously, you know, I think they're trying to go into a new era as well, with next year signing two new drivers. So their team, Bottas, who's a very experienced driver, can finally become a team leader. And then Guanyu Zhou, who we've covered before, who will hopefully bring some fresh blood and new talent and maybe a bit of cash flow into the team.
Yeah, and I think Bottas can really work on his main weakness, which with Mercedes is that if he gets stuck in the pack, he often gets caught and can't make up ground quick.
Yeah,
because the Alpha won't be as powerful and he'll be stuck more in the pack.
Yeah.
I think it'll challenge him, but I think it's a real opportunity for him to grow and also for them to make a leap. Guanyu Zhou, he did okay in the last F2 round. Not great, to be honest. Finished P3 in the championship. Oscar Piastri won. He killed it. Destroyed it. And we should be seeing him in Formula One at some point.
Yeah. Well, he's an official reserve driver for Alpine. So.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see. But
maybe Alonso will break his hip in his old age.
Yeah. Who knows?
No, of course.
I don't know. We'll see. But I think Alfa Romeo will do well. They have a good partnership.
Someone's got to not do well, you know? It's the thing.
They all have potential. I think that's worth highlighting.
Yeah. We'll get into the weaknesses. And speaking of not doing well and potential, in last spot is Haas, who's entering next year. In Haas's big thing was they said this year we're skipping this year. We don't care about this year. We're not evolving the car. We're not spending any money on it. We're spending money on next year.
Which is big.
They're going into next year with two people who have a bit more experience, with hopefully a car that is more competitive. I mean, Haas, in their maiden season, was fourth in the constructor.
What they are predicting...
who's they?
The team. But before that, no team has spent more time developing 2022 car than Haas, really, I think. Because this year, they focused all their development on the next year's car. They basically did what... we got to reflect and say that Mercedes essentially did.
In 2013?
No. Haas and Mercedes this year both ran a car that was essentially a year old.
Yeah.
Mercedes did it as well. Mercedes just tweaked it to the new regulations because there were some things.
Yeah, and brought some updates, but nothing huge. But
essentially, they ran the same car, and it's amazing that they still won the constructors.
Mercedes didn't spend a development token this year. They stay focused on next year.
Exactly. Okay, so... Haas did that as well. So I see something where the team has said what their goal is to be something around P6 and in a good season challenge for five, which is pretty high up. I mean, that's a pretty big jump. But as you just said, they weren't a bad team, really, ever. They weren't a super bottom of the pack team, but they've been like a consistent midfield team.
Yeah.
So it's worth seeing what will come of that. And it really depends on the drivers too, because... for all the controversy around Mazepin, there's also enough controversy to make around Schumacher. People just like Schumacher's dad more than they do Mazepin's dad. Essentially, that's the difference. And Schumacher did outperform Mazepin by a long shot in F2 and in this year. But still, they still have to prove themselves. And we'll see how well they can prove themselves with a hopefully way more competitive car. So that'll be an interesting thing.
Very much.
But as... that's the small summary of our to-come season prediction, I guess, we'll call it, or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, season forecast. Prediction, I think, happens just after
testing.
Yeah, testing, exactly. But as a small look into the future, so in the end of the year is approaching for all of us, and I think it's only appropriate if we do a full season review for Formula One and really talk through the highlights, race by race, driver by driver, see how quick it goes, how long it takes, whatever. But really do an in-depth kind of opinionated season review and year review for ourselves, and I think that'll be the next episode or two, something like that. Yeah.
And then the next time we'll cover Formula One is testing or Drive to Survive, whenever that comes out.
And you know, all the controversy that happens in between. I mean, for fuck's sake,
we might have a new title change.
We might have a title change at some point.
Man, I think Red Bull will withdraw from F1 then if that happens. Maybe they threatened that. Oh, we should think of some interesting legal arguments to make here.
And I don't think they can threaten. Well, they can threaten not for next year, but for whenever the next Concorde Agreement runs out, which I think is 2026 to go. No, if you make this choice, then we're dropping it eventually.
Which is, that would be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. Impact sinks
in. And then you can't decide the championship on that, you know.
No, exactly. I
mean, but it all happens behind closed doors.
4 years. What about those? Will you then give them championships in order to keep them?
Yeah.
I hope they just stay consistent with the rule book. If they find something where they say, no, Hamilton gained clear disadvantage here, even if we were to calculate in that other potential advantage he gained from the first lap, then he's the fair winner. Then good.
I mean, he clearly gained a disadvantage, but
this is what in soccer the video assistant referee is for, right?
Yeah.
In that moment, they score a goal off the crossbar, touches in, jumps out, and it's, referee says goal, and everybody goes, "Yeah, we won the championship last second, game over." But then the guy hears in his ear, "Hey, you got to check that again. I don't know if that was a goal or not. Cameras didn't quite pick it up." This is a bad example because they actually have a goal detection watch if the ball's way over, but just for the sake of it, it could be a slide tackle or whatever. And then they double check it and they go, "Oh no, never mind, it wasn't a goal. We're going to extra time." Then they lose and fuck, it's gone. And okay, well, that's how it is. It was the right decision though, but the process just took longer.
Then again, also in football,
it's fair.
Someone calls a foul wrong and that results in a goal. You know, people aren't going to go back and say, "Well, the foul was called wrong, so the goal." Really?
That's VAR. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was just for goals.
No. It's for, I don't know. There's a variety of incidents, but for red card incidents. Mm-hmm. So if a ref gives a yellow and it should have been a red, he'll tell him to double check it. He'll look and then he can make up his mind again.
Huh.
Then there's fouls leading up to a goal, or there's basically if you slide tackle the last guy away and it's not called, then the refs might say double check that. Mm-hmm. But there's only certain fouls that it applies to. If it's basically revolving around a major impact decision like a red card, a goal, whatever it is.
Okay, that's really interesting. I didn't know it was going that far, because I was going to make the comparison that, for example, in other sports, for example in football or so, European football. So soccer for the American listeners. I was going to say that there a decision like, you know, a game isn't going to be, the final score of a game isn't going to be changed after the game.
No, the game gets paused, but let's say it happens in the last second of the game, the goal, where you know that the moment you kick it off afterwards, it's going to be called off. So there's no realistic chance anymore, which is like the last stop in Formula One. Yeah, it's not after the race, but I don't think there's really ever been a change of score afterwards. And maybe it's because they never wanted to go that far, or it's not allowed. I'm actually not sure about that. That's a good point. But those last second decisions can technically happen, and they can get reviewed, and it can be met with scrutiny. And then you have other leagues, like in US sports, you immediately pause the game and the refs will watch it for like 10 minutes sometimes. They'll just watch it again and again and again to then just make the decision. But you can't really, although you could red flag it and they could have way more time for the race, right?
Yeah.
They could, as you said,
maybe
you should become a steward.
Well, Michael Massey, did you just say my last name?
Toby.
Goddamn.
I doubt the police has been listening to the
reasons. Well, no, it's not the police. That doesn't matter. You
know? Whoever would care.
Let's stay away from that.
I didn't.
What was I going to say?
I don't know. Your name?
And they watched it. Oh, yeah. But then Michael Massey came out before the race and said, if it comes down to a safety car in the last few laps, I don't want red flag. Yeah.
Why would he not want a red flag?
Because he wanted to race the race to the end on the strategy they had.
wait, Michael Massey had a strategy?
No, the strategy of the teams, right? Okay. He wanted to race the end, the race to the end, rather than red flagging and starting anew and giving everyone a chance to go on softs and all that. He wanted the race to play out.
But it would have been really cool to see everybody on softs.
I agree. I agree. I would have called it, but
because it would have caused less confusion with the back markers,
mm-hmm.
which initially irritated all of the teams.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially all it did. But man, yeah, that's where. Well, here's another question: do you think Michael Massey will retain his job for next year?
I think that they will probably be able. They would be down to keep him. I think he's going to retire. I mean, look, after all this shit, I wouldn't.
I don't think he wants to do it anymore.
I wouldn't be. I'd say, all right, bye. I don't know the man though, so you know, I don't know much about Michael Massey. I don't know how involved and how much he loves this, but after this season, with you know, it didn't matter what choice he made; it was always his fault.
That's true.
You know, so I wouldn't be doing this again.
I wonder when his contract expires.
I don't know how any of that works. But geez, how long have we been going? Hour and a half, two.
Yeah, something like
that. I think this is a good point to call it. We've covered the race and the end of the season extensively, almost live.
So congratulations to Max Verstappen.
Yeah, and maybe to Lewis Hamilton.
Guess we'll see what happens in the race.
Yeah.
Both drivers deserved it. That's something absolutely. We can both conclude. And I think in the final race, stewards, if they keep it the way it is now and nothing else happens, the stewards did not decide this race. Racing yeah, did.
I agree.
And all of the narrative of the stewards have to play the main role is false. So hopefully racing won out with this season. And it's been an incredible
season. What a fucking season it's been. What
a fucking season.
Yeah.
And I think our title should either be that or Supermax.
I do think what a fucking season is quite nice. Maybe it could be what a fucking season, comma Supermax.
That sounds good. Well, thank you for the few that managed to get through this whole episode.
Yeah, you got my last name as a thank you.
Yep. I doubt many people got there.
Well,
text us if you know Toby's name.
No, please don't.
His address is somewhere in Potsdam.
if I knew Howard's address. All right, everyone.
I went there.
Well,
great. You got this awkward giggle.
We wish you a wonderful rest of your time, day, evening, whatever, night.
We will see you soon. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Also, check out Spotify Wrapped.